I was watching the Sevens last night. Mum's over from Oz. And so as a whānau, we were sitting there, just had the big munchies, as you do on a Sunday evening. And we were enjoying it too. It was from Cape Town. Watched New Zealand in the quarterfinals. The blokes, they got whacked by Ireland. But in their defence, Ireland played a first half that probably they'll never play again. But it was almost perfect and sort of blew the Kiwi boys out of the water. They came back to put a bit of respectability in the scoreline, but was done and dusted really by halftime. Ken Labor, no doubt, watched the Sevens too. Hey, Ken, Tenakwe, thanks for joining us.
Yes, I did watch the Sevens. Very exciting. I was fortunate enough to be in Cape Town at the last tournament. They do a fabulous job promoting their tournament, getting very close to the level where Wellington was at their peak. Wonderful crowds, great atmosphere. The entertainment on ground is fantastic. It's a very multicultural, diverse city, Cape Town. And the DJs, the vibe, the atmosphere in the ground is terrific. And they've got a couple of plunge pools behind one of the in-goal areas as well. So they know how to have a laugh, they know how to have a good time, and the level of quality of entertainment between the games is first class. So from a football point of view, obviously the footy was up there as well, as good as the entertainment. Disappointment, obviously, from a New Zealand point of view, that we weren't able to get the job done over there. But it's just a reflection of how close all the teams are at the top level. Now, gone are the days where New Zealand and Fiji would walk into a sevens tournament and just walk all over everybody, play in the final and one of them would win. With the rise of Argentina and the rise of Australia, Spain, who have really come good as well in the last 4 or 5 years as well. These are all byproducts of a professional seven circuit, playing regularly, playing at a high level, and obviously with all the video analysis that's available now, there are no secrets in the game either. So it does make for entertaining and close contests.
Well, I know that they've got and it'll be a welcome spell to the next tournament, not until late January. So, better part of 6 weeks. And that downtime is going to be important to the players also. And then the remaining schedule sees them in Perth, Vancouver, LA, Hong Kong, Singapore, wrapping up in Madrid. So, we had our chances as hosts, eh? But the fun police in Wellington stepped in and said that'll be the end of that.
Yes, exactly. Disappointing. I must have commentated, I don't know, 10 or 12 of them over the years, or the majority of them during the time. And obviously, we're at its very, at its ultimate peak as well, with 35,000 there over 2 days, plus the parade in downtown Wellington on the Thursday when the teams arrived. You couldn't get a hotel, motel, Airbnb anywhere south of Levin. What it meant from a GDP point of view and money that was invested in the local economy as a result, I think, something like $15 to $20 million dollars, as it was back then, would be considerably more now. And what it meant for hotels, bars, restaurants, the hospitality industry, the sale of souvenirs, public transport. All of those things were a result of having big crowds that were in for 3 days in Wellington. And the teams used to say at the James Cook, the old James Cook, or the Grand Chancellor as it is now, on the terrace, they would all be around town for the whole week. They would start arriving in New Zealand and into Wellington on the Monday of the week preceding. So, there was lots of interest and lots of hype around town. And as you say, it's now not to be. Some of those bars and restaurants they've never been able to get the same level of custom. And it wasn't only in the CBD, it was out in all the areas. And then as well, with huge groups, meeting at various suburbs at railway stations. And, they would party up and then all jump on the train and head into town. It was a wonderful And unfortunately, you know, Hamilton wasn't able to get to the same level as Wellington, and then, you know, everybody was invited to submit bids to become one of the seven iconic venues, which is how they were, what they requested World Rugby in terms of determining who would host these events, and New Zealand missed out.
Tēnā koe. Should be interesting. League in Las Vegas.
Yes, I see the 17,000 tickets I read yesterday have been sold already. They're not sure whether they're going to recoup the money. That, my understanding, it's a 5-year agreement. They're the NRL, and every team in the NRL is going to get a chance to play in Vegas over the course of the five years. It's going to take four teams up every year. And I do know that Peter Valandis, as we all know, he's the chief executive of New South Wales Racing Board, as well as being chair of the NRL, understands intimately the impact and role that that gambling and punting has on sport. And it's my understanding that their aim is to try to get the NRL to become, I think, 1 or 1.5% of the US gambling market. And if they're able to do that, then apparently it's going to be a huge windfall to continue the growth of the NRL, which we've seen massively in the last couple of years. So it's a bold, innovative move. The first move is to play games for 5 years, to sell the product as a TV and as another outlet for people to go to on their phone. And obviously, if you can get 330 million Americans or a fraction of that to punt $10 every week, it's going to be good.
Let's talk about some of the movements. One that I've noted is the young Manly player, Haumole Olakau'atu. He's signed a 6-year deal to keep him there. And back home here, we've secured the services of Kurt Capewell, ex-Penrith, through the Broncos. He only had 1 year left on his contract in Brisbane, but a 3-year deal from the Warriors. I think he's in his early 30s, and interesting but not surprising, extending the contract of Tohu Harris and Rocco Berry, who initially I was unconvinced about, but obviously Andrew Webster sees some, but not just potential, but some stability in Rocco Berry's game going forward. What do you make of the signings and extensions at the Warriors, Ken?
Well, Capewell is a player who's enjoyed great success in the game with a similar in a similar vein to Tohu Harris. So, you know, he's been a premiership winner as well. So he's used to going to deep into the playoffs. He didn't win the title this year, but nonetheless he got to the grand final again, having been there this time with the Broncos, but previously, as you mentioned, with Penrith. He's tall, he's athletic, he's fit, he's tough, and he's experienced. So he's going to be good. Not sure whether he's going to be used on the edge or in the middle. Those are the options for Webster, with Tohu Harris spending quite a bit of time at 13 this year. Tohu might end up in the front row, bearing in mind they're going to lose a high profile front row, aren't they, at the end of the year anyway. That may be capable of slot into that 13 position, though. That's just one option. You know, or he could play on one of the edge second row positions. Rocco Berry, well, I'm exactly the same as you. I was very unconvinced he was signed out of St. Pat Silverstring First 15 here in Wellington, having had no experience in rugby league. So he really had his first experience when he joined the Warriors as a junior, first year out of St. Pat Silverstream. And 2023 has probably been his best year in first grade. So if anybody's worked hard to deserve a new contract, it's him. I wouldn't put him in the top bracket of the league centres in the game, but he's most certainly capable of doing a job for the Warriors. And if he has a good off season and an even better pre season when the trials come around, he's got as good a chance as anybody to make the starting lineup, if not the 17.
Tēnā koe. You know, we talk about monies in the sport down home here, but gee, the the Yanks know how to do it, don't they? I see a baseball guy's just signed a $1 billion contract across 10 years. What's his name? Otani or something, his name is. I'm not so familiar with him, but gee, there's some big money in baseball over in the States, isn't there?
Oh, yeah, some big money in Japan as well. When I was in Japan a couple of years ago, I went to the Fukuoka Dome to a midweek baseball game, and I think it was the team coming 11th playing the team coming 12th, 34,500 at the game, and the midweek game on a Wednesday.
Wow.
Unbelievable hype, entertainment, and the quality as well, with a number of Major League Baseball players jumping between Japan and America. As well, and there have been some outstanding players, past and present, from Japan that have come out of the baseball system there that have been doing phenomenally well. And now, as you point out, this latest player on the $1 billion contract, the highest paid player in the history of the game, is a Japanese boy.
Well, incredible, and good to see. Do you know, we've had a 10-minute conversation without mentioning Wainui Amata, so I got that one in. What's been happening in the hood, brother?
Well, the last time we spoke last week, I was in Fiji, bro, standing in the sand, talking to you after there was a big Wainui Amata 1989 Talo Park reunion at the Tyrone Lomax wedding.
That's right.
We had a fabulous weekend. In fact, there was about five or six of us from the team, and we had a very nice photo with Tyrell and Ankley, his wife. Which I'm sure will hang proudly in our club room. So we might not have mentioned Wainui Amata much today, but we had a big weekend last weekend.
Good on you, Ken. Good talking with you, man. I look forward to our last kōrero for the year next week. Thanks again for all that you contribute. Sure. Ken Laban kindly joining us on today's program.